Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Ekastvam Atma Purushak Puranaha. Satyak Svayam Jyotir Ananta Adhayaha. Nityokshara Jasra Sukho Naranjana. Purnadvayo Mukta Upadito Mritaha. Ekastvam Atma Purushak Puranaha.
Ekastvam Atma Purushak Puranaha.
Satyak Svayam Jyotir Ananta Adayaha. Nityakshara Jasra Sukho Niranjana.
Nityakshara Jasra Sukho Niranjana.
Purnadvayo Mukta Upadito Mrita.
Purnadvayo Mukta Upadito Mrita.
Translation, you are the Supreme Soul, the primeval Supreme Personality, the Absolute Truth, self-manifested, endless and beginningless. You are eternal and infallible, perfect and complete, without any rival, and free from all material designations. Your happiness can never be obstructed, nor have you any connection with material contaminations. Indeed, you are the indestructible nectar of immortality. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Actually, this is by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Sridhara Swami explains how the various terms of this verse demonstrate that the transcendental body of Lord Krishna is free from the characteristics of material bodies. All material bodies go through six phases: birth, growth, maturity, reproduction, decline, and destruction. But Lord Krishna does not take material birth, since he is the original reality, a fact clearly indicated here by the word adya, or original. We take our material birth within a particular material atmosphere, in material bodies that are amalgamations of various material elements. Since Lord Krishna existed long before the creation of any material atmosphere or element, there is no question of material birth for his transcendental body. One down and several more to go. Adhyaha. And now, similarly, the word purna, meaning full and complete, refutes the concept that Lord Krishna could grow, since he is ever existing in fullness. When one's material body becomes mature, one can no longer enjoy as youth. But the words ajasra, sukha, enjoying unobstructed happiness, indicates that Lord Krishna's body never reaches so-called middle age, since it is always full of spiritual youthful bliss. The word akshara, or undiminishing, refutes the possibility that Lord Krishna's body grows old or declines. Akshara, undiminishing. And the word amrita, immortal, negates the possibility of death. In other words, Lord Krishna's transcendental body is free from the transformations of material bodies. The Lord does, however, create innumerable worlds and expands himself as innumerable living entities. But the Lord's so-called reproduction is completely spiritual and does not take place at a certain phase of bodily existence. Rather, it constitutes the Lord's eternal proclivity to expand his spiritual bliss and glories. As the Lord states in Shruti, Purvam evaham ehasam, I alone existed in the beginning. Therefore, here the Lord is called Purusha Parana, the primeval enjoyer. This original Purusha expands himself as the Supersoul and enters every living being. Still, he is ultimately the Absolute Truth, Krishna, as stated in the Gopala Tapani Upanishad. Ya sakshat parabrahmeti govindam satchit ananda vigraham brindavanam sura bhura bhuruhu bhuruha talasinam. The Absolute Truth is Govinda, who has an eternal form of bliss and knowledge, and who is sitting beneath a shady desire tree in Vrindavan. This Absolute Truth is beyond material ignorance and even beyond ordinary spiritual knowledge, as stated in the same Gopala Tapani Shruti. Vidya vidya bhayam bhina. Thus, in many ways, the supremacy of Lord Krishna has been established in the Vedic literature, and it is here confirmed by Lord Brahma himself. And it's pretty amazing, if Lord Brahma can understand all these things, how he did what he did. Got a little carried away. It's bewildering how Lord Brahma can become bewildered. One should be very careful. Remember here, one discussion where Srila Prabhupada was describing expanding on the Muyanti Yat Surayaha verse from the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Tejo Vari Madam Yatavinimayo Yatra Misargo Mrsham. Even the great demigods become bewildered, and Prabhupada was giving examples. Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, etc. So a devotee asked, how do we understand when Lord Brahma becomes bewildered? He's the head of our sampradaya. And Prabhupada, they didn't even get to finish, and Prabhupada became very angry. He's perfect, and yet he's doing these things. His expression was something like, this isn't exactly, but something like, he's perfect enough. We shouldn't question, because the spirit was a little bit like that, hey, what's going on? Not so much a submissive, but more of a challenging spirit. So, when we're considering, he manifests the Vedas. T. Tene brahma hridaya adikavaye muyanti atsuraya. So he's manifesting the Vedas. He's not the Vedas personified, but he knows the Vedas because Krishna directly imparts within his heart. And from him, anyone else can know about the Vedas. Anyone else that does know about the Vedas knows from him, particularly in our sampradaya. So, what's going on? How do we understand this? Krishna's establishing within the scripture, beyond the shadow of doubt, the supremacy of the personality of Godhead, and through the mouth of Lord Brahma, he's establishing that supremacy. It's something like when we have discussions with people that are, you know, have this version and that version and another version of spirituality, especially if they're from India, one question you can ask is, do you accept Bhagavad Gita? And if they say, yes, I accept Bhagavad Gita, then it's a slam dunk. If they don't accept Bhagavad Gita, then you have some dialogue about, but once Bhagavad Gita is accepted, the message that Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita is so clear. Just like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was discussing with Prakashananda Saraswati or Sarvabhaumavatacharya, and the indirect meanings which Sarvabhaumavatacharya was establishing, Lord Chaitanya said, is making the meaning of Vedanta Sutra more and more obscured. Every word you speak, it's becoming more and more distant, the actual meaning. Because indirect meanings do that. That this means that, and that means something else. And then, so anyway, the direct meaning was immediately accepted. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya could understand not only you have the truth, but you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because who can speak like this? So, and Prakashananda, Saraswati, and his followers, they all became convinced because they had all been hearing the indirect blah blah thing. And when they heard the direct message, because they're actually very elevated by sense control and so forth, they could understand, wow, this is it. Like someone was asking yesterday evening, a young American fellow at the program, new to Krishna consciousness, and how do I understand what is that one supreme, because this one says this and that one says that. When a sincerely inquiring soul hears, that the message becomes very clear. If one, in fact, wants a very clear message, there are persons that don't. But those that want, then it's so, as Krishna is speaking in Bhagavad Gita so clearly, when someone comes along and says, not unto Krishna, manmana, don't think of Krishna, think of something else. You know, then you understand what's going on. Wait a minute. Krishna says, think of me. And so when you're hearing from a qualified person, then it becomes very clear. So here, Lord Brahma is speaking. He is that qualified person. He's the manifesting personality of all the Vedas. So the situation is being arranged, has been arranged, so that who is supreme? In Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's a very nice presentation made by Vrindavan Das Thakur describing the pastime from one of the Puranas in which the rishis had gathered together and they were trying to understand. They wanted to have a big yajna, and they wanted to have it offered unto the Supreme, but then they had different points of view of who was Supreme. The Bhrigu Muni story. So they all agreed that we really want to know, we want to be on the, you know, rowing in the same direction, as we say these days. We want to be on the same page, just using those colloquialisms. They wanted to have consensus as to who is Supreme. And so they agreed, this is very important, we have some agreement, we have this yajna. So then they came up with an idea. What are qualities that evidence this is the Supreme? They all agreed what the qualities were. And then, so bring a challenge to test the qualities. They all agreed that's a good program, but nobody wanted to do it. But they all turned to Bhrigu, who said, I don't want to do it. It'll make a big offense. And so on. But he finally accepted their request for some service. So, Vrindavan Das Thakur describes that Bhrigu, his kicking of the chest of Lord Vishnu, was preceded by a mental offense and then a verbal offense followed by the corporeal offense. In succession, those are greater. Mental offense, Bhrigu didn't acknowledge his father. His father was very happy to see him, but he just said nothing, spoke nothing. His father became angry. So Vrindavan Das Thakur says, they were doing like that simply to establish the personality of Godhead. Lord Vishnu is supreme. They wanted to glorify Lord Vishnu. And so they adopted that behavior. That's what Vrindavan Das Thakur said. And Lord Shiva became angry when verbally he was insulted, and Lord Vishnu remained undisturbed even when kicked in the chest. Lakshmi didn't remain undisturbed. She was very disturbed. But Lord Vishnu remained undisturbed. But it's not exactly like that, that Lord Brahma just kind of play-acted, pretending, so that Krishna can be glorified. He's supreme, not me. That previously was established in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Narada approaches Lord Brahma and says, are you not supreme? I see you meditating. And upon whom are you meditating? Because I thought you were supreme. You created everything. Is there somebody beyond you? And again, Prabhupada explains, Narada was taking that position in order to have Lord Brahma glorify the personality of God. He was induced, much like Arjuna was induced, to become bewildered as to what was his duty. And had to be taught, you know, Krishna Consciousness 101, you're not this body, and be detached from fruitive work, and 102, and then 201, and just like, you know, go through the lessons all over again. So that we could hear Krishna speak Bhagavad Gita. So it's a little bewildering how Lord Brahma was bewildered. We shouldn't think of his bewilderment for sure. We should not think of his bewilderment like our bewilderment. Like, you know, we're deep in Gaga land, and, you know, we don't really know. We've totally forgotten, or we're truly in Maya. And the situation with Lord Brahma is unique, not like our being in Maya. But I once heard Prabhupada say it both ways. Was Arjuna in Maya, or was it Yogamaya? And I've heard Prabhupada give both answers. One, when he was denying to serve Krishna, according to Krishna's indication, he was in Maya. But by Krishna's association, he was relieved from that Maya and then became again situated in Yogamaya. And the other is that Krishna induced Arjuna to be like that, so we can't think of his situation to be like our situation. So, if our acharyas have spoken something definitive, that would be very nice. But at least we should understand that it's not our kind of... I mean, listen to his speaking. He's not unclear. He's very clear. What is Krishna's position? Although he's looking at him as a small boy, just 5-6 years old, with his left hand extended, with a lump of yogurt and some fruit in his hand, looking at him. Little boy. And he's saying all these things to him. You are the Supreme Soul, the Supreme Absolute Personality of Godhead, self-manifested, endless, and beginningless. Who's going to say that to a 5-6-year-old little boy? A learned person like Lord Brahma? Because there is no illusion in his being, in his existence. So, the purport begins with the commentary, our commentators, or the reference to the commentator Sridhar Swami, where Sridhar Swami is letting us know the essence of what Brahma is doing is, he's indicating the transcendental body, the nature of the transcendental form of Krishna. Because he was bewildered, the prior incident was the Agasura demon, and Brahma seeing that and whoa, look at this mystic opulence. What's the extent of Krishna's mystic opulence? Maybe if I do this, I can get to see the limit of Krishna's mystic opulence. In one sense, it's a challenge of my mystic opulence against his mystic opulence, forgetting that Krishna is the source of his mystic opulence. It's an offense. Or it's the forgetting Krishna's actual position is illusion. It's the essence of illusion. So, the nature of Krishna's form, janma karma chame divyam, so the nature of Krishna's appearance is expressed very clearly. Anything that appears has its source of appearance, you know, cause and effect. But Krishna has no source or cause of his appearance. He's Adya. He's the original. Since Lord Krishna existed long before the creation of any material atmosphere or element, there's no question of material birth for his transcendental body. One of the things that Prabhupada liked to speak about, so he spoke about it many, many times, is the notion that scientists have that there's not life on other planets. And he was over and over again discussed why there's not life on other planets. Krishna says there's life everywhere. And so we may not be able to live in the air, but there are living entities that live in the air. We may not be able to live in the water. Living entities live in the water. They have air bodies or watery bodies or fiery bodies in the sun. Because we cannot enter and see those fiery bodies, we declare there's no life in the moon, there's no life in the sun. Yeah?
There was something just the other day, they're drilling like under the Arctic Circle and they've gone down so far, far, far. And then they stuck the camera.
600 miles. No, excuse me, 60 miles. 60 miles. And saw little shrimp.
Shot. How's it possible? Like he was playing with the camera almost, you know.
Yeah.
Where did you come from?
And then the tentacle of a jellyfish. And, you know, it's not possible for life to exist, according to science, under, you know, with no light. And, you know, what to speak of food. It can't exist. So... But the following the logic that's being presented here, bodies are the amalgamation of elements. So Mother Nature supplies the ingredients, and Krishna supplies the seed, and the combination of the two generates life, but it's according to the composition of the material elements. But Krishna exists before there's material elements. So when Krishna manifests a form, it's not of material elements. This is a major argument of Shankara's teachings directly. Brahman becomes covered. One of the Vaishnava arguments against that is, how is that? If Brahman becomes covered, that makes the covering greater than Brahman. And the sleight of hand is, well, actually it's not covered, because all there is Brahman. It only appears to be that there's a covering. It's circular reasoning that's totally illogical, but that's the teaching or the vada, the doctrine. Brahman becomes covered. This is saying not possible, because he who exists before there's material ingredients, his existence is not dependent upon those material ingredients, not the amalgamation of material ingredients making up a body. So that's the adya term. Then purna. Purna means complete. Full and complete. So complete, now the sense that is being presented here, I'm assuming it's following the line of our acharyas in their commentary, Sridhar Swami's in particular, that when Krishna appears, it seems that he's growing. He's a baby, and then he's, you know, little boy, and he's got his childhood pastimes, then his youthhood pastimes, and then... But he is full, in his fullness. Again, so many times Prabhupada would speak that when Krishna was just a few days old, he had such power that he killed the demon as Putana. With his little baby hands, he squeezed the breast of Putana so much that she was in pain and screaming. With all of her strength, tried to get Krishna off her body and leave me, and she couldn't. It was too much painful. Look at little baby's hands, little fingers like little filaments. But he was in fullness. And even in this lila, his little 5-6-year-old body generating from his body identical forms as the calves and the cowherd boys, and each of them Narayan forms. He's Purna, even it's very small. His fullness is not, growing with his age. His fullness is primordial. Then Ajasra Sukha. Sukha is happiness. Ajasra Sukha is unobstructed happiness. So there's no circumstance that can create Krishna's happiness or check Krishna's happiness. If it's true for a realized soul, it's certainly true for Krishna. Our teaching in the first canto, second chapter of the Bhagavatam, that form of devotional service, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojyata Janayati Ashu Vairagyam. That's not it. Ahoituki apratiyata yayatma supersedati. Without material cause, when devotional service is rendered without material cause and without material checking of that devotional service, the soul becomes fully satisfied. So if the satisfaction is inherent, provided devotional service unto Vasudeva is performed, what can one say about Vasudeva? His devotional service is not circumstantial. It's intrinsic. Raso Vai Saha. His existence is rasa. It's transcendental happiness. Anandamayo Vyasa. His nature is full of bliss. It's not circumstantial. So there's nothing that can obstruct. Even the most awful thing cannot obstruct Krishna's happiness. Not possible. Ajasra Sukham. And then Akshara. Prabhupada named one of his disciples Akshara. An Australian devotee, I remember him from Manhattan temple days. So Akshara, undiminishing. So it's not that Krishna became influenced by old age. His happiness and his vitality and so forth, undiminishing through passage of time. He's not influenced by time. He's not influenced by matter. His body is fully transcendental with unlimited spiritual potency, undiminishing. Like even the most powerful thing in this world, the sun, it will eventually become extinguished. Even if one could think of something more powerful than the sun, it's material, it has a beginning and an end, but diminishing over a period of time. Not Krishna. His transcendental body is akshara, undiminishing, not declining with age, and therefore also amrita, immortal. No beginning and no end. Like, what is that? Infinity. What is that? Get your mind around that one. What is it that has no beginning and has no end? Try to think of that. Try to encompass that within your mind. It doesn't fit. Or the mind isn't elastic enough to get around it. No beginning, no end. And yet, so the incorrect conclusion of the impersonalist is, well, it must be impersonal, because something personal has, there's where the body isn't, and there's where the body is. It, you know, this has its beginning. It has its end. Over there is not. So, but Krishna's body, Krishna's form, has no beginning and has no end. It seems that form is limiting, but it's not. That's a misconception. It's a material conception. That Krishna's form is fully spiritual. It doesn't... When you consider or carefully contemplate the nature of a transcendental form, Krishna's form is fully transcendental, it doesn't match with material conceptions. And we can easily just go along da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da and not even think about it and not fully appreciate the transcendental form of Krishna, but Brahma is fully appreciated. Concluding paragraph is the Upanishad references to support what Brahma is saying, which is what our acharyas have done, and it's a classic way. When making some statement, what is the authority that supports the statement? So he refers to the Shruti mantras. Purvam evaham ehasam. The Lord is stating in the Shruti mantras, I alone existed in the beginning. We have these quotes from found in the Bhagavad Gita purports also. I am the before the beginning of creation, I alone exist. This is the Chaturshloki, first of the Chaturshloki verses of the Bhagavatam as well. Before creation, I alone exist. During the cosmic manifestation, I alone exist. After annihilation, guess what? I alone exist. So whatever there is but an expansion of Krishna. So the impersonalists go, yeah, that's all there is Brahman. And the Vaishnavas go, yeah, everything comes from Krishna. And while it may be manifest for some time and then withdrawn, Krishna is the source. So in this verse, Purusha Parana, he's the primeval enjoyer. So there's indicating three, the enjoyer, the enjoyed, and the process of enjoying. So the impersonalist doesn't like that. No, you can't have Purusha, because then you have to have the enjoyer, then you have the enjoyed, and you have the process of enjoying, but you can't have that. You can only have one. All there is Brahman. It's like taking a sledgehammer and, you know, smashing anything with variety, just by philosophical sledgehammer. But the Shruti mantras don't say that. Here's another one. Yasakshat para brahmeti govindam sachit ananda vigraham vrindavanam sura bhuruha talasinam. The absolute truth is Govinda, who has an eternal form of bliss and knowledge, and was sitting beneath a shady desire tree of Vrindavan. That says it all. Not only his body is full of eternality, bliss, and knowledge, but he's enjoying his pastimes in Vrindavan, one of which is a nice shady tree in Vrindavan, sitting beneath and smiling. That is the absolute truth. That's this personality that Brahma is describing. He is always the Supreme Personality of Godhead, before he appears, during his pastimes, and after he departs. I'm just reading. somewhere, I forget one of the places I was traveling. I think it's Chicago. The section where, no, it's the course of my travels. The section of the third canto, beginning part, chapter 2, where Krishna has just left. So his departure lila is also bewildering for some, but not for Uddhava. So Vidura is speaking to Uddhava. He doesn't even want to speak about Krishna's departure. He just speaks about Krishna and the associates of Krishna. Uddhava speaks about Krishna's departure and describes the transcendental nature of Krishna's departure and how that impacts upon the heart of those who are very dear to Krishna. He describes it in very moving words, like most unfortunate, but very similar to Lord Brahma's description standing before Krishna. His transcendental nature is radiating through their descriptions. Uddhava, when he's speaking, he can hardly speak because he's so transcendentally absorbed in the thought of Krishna, hearing about Krishna from just hearing his name spoken by Vidura. He practically goes into a trance. In the purport, our acharyas describe, he goes to Krishna Loka to be with Krishna because he's hearing about Krishna. He knows where Krishna has gone. He's in Krishna Loka, but he wants to answer Vidura's question. And so he tries to come to external consciousness and move the tears from his eyes and the choking of his voice so he can speak. That's Vidura. And Rama is not in the same emotional state, but is speaking the same message. That the form of Krishna is fully transcendental here. That's what we're hearing in this verse. So, any questions or comments from anyone? Yes.
Correct. The verse says Purusha Prana. Can you explain a little bit more about that? Because the purport says Puna.
Purusha Puranaha, and the verse says Purusha Puranaha. So that you're not pointing out a contradiction, you just want to hear it further described?
Because Puranaha is complete, Puranaha is Adi, Pranidhi.
I'm not sure what your question is. Are you sure what your question is?
I want to explain more about the Purusha Purana, because Purusha Purana
Purusha means enjoyer, and Puranaha is the oldest or the original, or in the purport it's primeval enjoyer. So distinct from us. We're imitation purushas. So that which is meant for Krishna's enjoyment, we're trying to be the enjoyers of. So we're the Pondraka purushas. But the original purusha, the Purana purushaha, that's Krishna. He's the actual enjoyer. They're his energies, the spiritual and the material worlds. And all the marginal living entities. He is the enjoyer of that all. He's the Puranaha, the primeval, the original enjoyer of everything. He's the factual enjoyer of everything. Others are, at best, you can say secondary enjoyers. That's at best. like how we enjoy devotional service, for example. It's not that it's bad to be an enjoyer of devotional service. Shame on you, you're an enjoyer of devotional service. No, the devotional service is joyfully performed, but that joyfulness is a secondary enjoyment. It's the enjoyment of love when one sees and experiences the beloved is enjoying. When Krishna is enjoying, we become happy. But he's the primeval enjoyer because we're a part and parcel of him and he's enjoying, we're enjoying. In that sense, he's the Purusha Puranaha. He's the primeval enjoyer. And we're the secondary enjoyer. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, actually. Like the purpose says Purna. Or the disciples'
purpose
explains
Purna,
not
Purana.
So it's
just. Use the moment. Purnaha and Puranaha. It doesn't say Purnaha. It says Puranaha. Where are we?
In the purport.
In the purport.
Purnaha is the last line. Purnaha.
Okay. But we're in the. Is this on the screen here? Okay. In the first line, Atma Purusha Puranaha, that's being quoted in the purport as well. But you're looking at the last line when it says Purna.
It's also there.
It's also there. So, I'm not sure what you're asking to be. You could say it again, but I'm not sure what you're asking. Because he's the primeval enjoyer, and you could say his enjoyment or his existence, which includes the subset of which is his enjoyment, he is Purna. He's complete. It means he doesn't. There is nothing outside of himself, and he needs nothing outside of himself. He's complete. So his enjoyment is complete, and he's complete, and everything in relation to him is complete. Is that what you're looking for? I don't know what you're looking at, so clue me in. You want to say something further, or we'll go on? Okay. Anyone else? Yes.
Well, say that Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they represent mode of passion and ignorance. What's that?
Superintending their avatars in charge of those modes of nature. That's what it means. Doesn't mean Lord Shiva is ignorant. That's not what it means. He's in charge of that mode of nature. And Lord Brahma is in charge of a different mode of nature. Okay? Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.